Well hit ball to deep right field. Judge is back and it's gone. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. with an opposite field three-run homer. And the Blue Jays are out to a 5-0 lead.
What is going on? It's The Letters, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Ben Nicholson Smith, Arden's Welling, outside of Yankee Stadium prior to Game 2. Actually, might be during Game 2 at this point of this Blue Jays-Yankees series in the Bronx. We got a chat with Ariel Helwani that we had earlier that will be coming up later in the podcast. You know him from MMA coverage, from the Ariel Helwani Show, the MMA Hour, various other platforms. Had a great chat with him about the Expos, about the Blue Jays, about some parallels between fighting and baseball. So look forward to that later on in the podcast. But got to start off, Ben, by talking to the old Blue Jays, just kind of checking in with this team because stuff keeps happening. Jose Berríos goes out on Thursday night, gets into a little trouble at times, has some traffic around him on the base pass, but powers through it and has kind of one of these really good Jose Berríos outings that we've seen this year and that have been interspersed by really bad Jose Berríos outings.
Exactly. And so because we've seen this before, I'm not going to stand here and say, all right, like it's fixed. Jose Berríos is now back to being that number three starter that the Toronto Blue Jays need him to be. I mean, that would clearly be a leap that Berríos hasn't quite earned given the trajectory of his season this year. Now, when you're facing the Yankees and you have Aaron Judge in this lineup at this park on the road, 40,000 people, he did a really good job to be able to deliver the kind of start that he did. So full credit to Jose Berríos. To me, as I look forward with him, I think for him to kind of turn that page and get back to where he probably should be, given his stature and significance to this organization, I think they probably need to see something like 4 of the next 5 resembling what we just saw.
It's funny because all year it has been just the most peaks and valleys season for Jose Berríos. Like when he's really good, he's really, really good. When he's really bad, it's like 8 runs in 4 innings. There really hasn't been anything in between. Like it's very seldom that you see that like 5 and dive 2 to 3 runs from him. It's like either I'm going 6 and 7 and I'm only allowing a run or two, or I'm giving up 8 over 4. So it's going to kind of be interesting to see if he can find some more consistency or if that oscillation is going to continue. We were kind of bantering yesterday about whether you would start Ross Stripling in the third game of a wild card series. We arrived at that being the guy. Do you still feel that way? Or is Jose Berríos earning his way in?
Yeah, with Jose Berríos, I would certainly still have more faith in Ross Stripling to give you a steady 5 or 6 innings. With Berríos, not quite there with that consistency. So, you know, just my personal opinion at this point. And look.
So is Berríos in your, like, bullpen for a wild card series?
No, because you still... For a wild card series?
Yeah.
Maybe, but here's the likely thing. One way or another, you are going to need 4 starters, right? Because someone's going to be pitching game 1 of the division series if you make it that far. The way the Jays are going right now, someone's going to have to pitch game 162 against Baltimore in a game that might have huge ramifications. So essentially, you need 4, if not 5, starters pitching games that are of a huge significance. So, you know, Berríos to me is one of those starters. Whether you sequence him, Stripling, you know, it's almost besides the point because they're going to need 4 guys. And this is a realization we kind of came to a couple weeks ago, but you really do need 4 because whoever's not in that wild card might be games 1 and 5 of division series.
Well, yeah, you think about the games that you need to get you into the postseason and then some kind of the weird off day structure this year with the playoff schedule. We're going to see different sort of rotation outlays this year, I think, than we're accustomed to in the past. Also, I have to talk about George Springer, obviously, who, I mean, talk about ups and downs to a season. 5 hits on Thursday night. Looks like the George Springer of old. We show up here on Friday, it's out of the lineup because he fouled the ball off of his knee. What do you make of it?
As you say, it's so many ups and downs. Like, he looks so good on the field in that game to be able to give them 5 hits. He's got 8 hits, 9 hits since coming back from the injured list.
Just his first pinch hit of his career, which also happened to be the 1,000th hit of his career. Do you think that's ever happened where you've gotten your 1,000th hit and also the first pinch hit of your career? I can't imagine.
Right? I would be stunned. And so it's been a great week for George Springer to be able to put that together and then fouls it off the knee. He's out of the lineup again. Now, we know that for the Blue Jays to get to where they want to go, they need a healthy Springer. They don't need one who's out there trying to force it at this point in the season. So I think, you know, it obviously makes sense, but it just feels like deja vu for the Jays with the number of things that Springer has had to deal with in a pretty short period of time. He's not getting younger. He's not playing an easy defensive position. So it's a delicate balancing act for this team as they try to get the most out of their most expensive player.
It's my only question with George Springer's availability. Because when he's on the field, he's George Springer, right? Like, no matter how compromised he is, he still produces like George Springer. Look at the numbers, right? Like, look at the season that he's having. Like, if you look at it, you know, coming into today, he had like 93 games played. But, I mean, OPS plus, weighted runs created plus, the power, the exit velocities, all of that stuff. Everything is right where it should be, except for games played. And that's really been the case for him in his Blue Jays tenure. Like, I think when the Blue Jays signed George Springer, they expected, yeah, I mean, he's probably going to miss some time, right? Like, he's an outfielder in his early to mid-30s. Like, and he had an injury history prior to this. I think they probably anticipated somewhere in the 130, 135-ish games per year range from George Springer. But they've gotten less than that to this point.
They really have. And so going forward, I think that if they get 30 out of the next, what is it, 44 games remaining?
45, including Fridays.
Including Fridays.
So 44 after Friday.
If they get two-thirds of those games regular season, and maybe more importantly, if he's ready to go for the playoffs and healthy or healthy-ish at that point in the season, then I think that's like an A-minus outcome for this team. Of course, you could do better. But, you know, I think even if you get two-thirds to help them get to where they need to go and arrive there in good shape. I mean, I don't know if you could ask for much more than that.
It's funny, he came into Friday with 93 games played, 45 left. Say he plays like 37 of those. That's 130 games.
Yeah.
I think that's an okay outcome, honestly, yeah, with a George Springer, like, and with the way he's producing. If it was 130 games of like 105 weighted runs created plus and the exit velos aren't there, that would be another thing, you know? If he wasn't drawing walks anymore, if he was striking out and swinging and missing a ton. But no, all that stuff is like of George Springer standard. It's just the Blue Jays finding a way to get him to that games played total that they were counting on.
It's funny, right? Because like he could play in 37 of the next 45 games. That's possible. Maybe some of those are pinch hit appearances, as we saw just earlier in this week. You know, it's not necessarily starting them all. And then you get to whatever it is, 130 games, even 125. That's solid. I mean, it's not your 100th percentile outcome, but it's probably your 45th. And that works. Like, that plays with George Springer, unfortunately. Because, you know, to go back to Berríos for a second, or Kikuchi for that matter, who made his relief debut, you know, in the opener here at Yankee Stadium, the percentiles that you're getting from them this year, this is like a 20th percentile outcome for Berríos. And I would say a 20th percentile outcome for Kikuchi.
Do you have any thoughts on Kikuchi after that debut out of the bullpen? I think that there's a day coming. It's going to be at like Fenway Park. It's going to be the 11th inning. Mitch White has like gone, he's five and dived, right? And then you ran through a bunch of relievers to get you into the 11th. It's the ball in the 11th and you're protecting like a one or two run lead. Ghost runner starting on second, and you say Kikuchi's coming in to get you really big outs in like a game that you need. And you were trying not to go to him, right? Like, you weren't putting him in any of those prior innings to get you to the 11th. But it's like I said on the pod yesterday, I really think Yusei Kikuchi's going to be getting some big outs for this team. Maybe not because they choose to put him in high leverage spots, but because they're going to get into a spot where they don't have a choice.
Yeah, and that's entirely possible. If that happens, then I wouldn't be shocked. But, you know, to answer the original question that you posed there, I don't view things differently after seeing what we saw in that opener. And to be honest, like, I don't know exactly where your threshold would be for how far along he would have to go is before you would change your opinion. But Blake Murphy asked me this earlier today on his show, Blue Jays Talk Plus, and to me it was like he would have to go no walks, zero walks, for at least, I don't know, 15 innings, something like that.
Right.
I don't know where you would put the line, but he's not close to that right now.
Time now for Major League Beer for Major League Baseball, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer.
Are we going to crap on some more Yankees legends today?
not today. Not with all these Yankees
fans. Babe
Ruth
yesterday. Who is it today? DiMaggio, maybe?
Not as I'm literally surrounded by Derek Yankees
Jeter
fans. I'm not going to do that. All right. Let me propose this to you, because the Kikuchi thing kind of got me thinking. And I'm not saying that, like, you say Kikuchi has 75 grade stuff, but he has really, really good stuff.
Yep.
Doesn't have great command, right? So you can have one of these two pitchers as a project. You're getting him, I'm going to give you 6 years of control over him. They're the same age, same size, same handedness, whatever. The only difference between them is one of them has 75 grade stuff, 35 grade command.
Yep.
The other one has 75 grade command.
Yep.
35 grade stuff? Who do you want?
Great question. To me, I would go, honestly, with the command pitcher. And, well, can I ask? Oh, man. I guess I've already tipped my hand, so I'm going to stick with my answer here. I'm going to assume that you can develop this pitcher. We don't know how old this pitcher is. We don't know exactly, are they a college pitcher, a high school pitcher? Maybe they're already a pro. But I will still, regardless, take the pitcher with the command, because it is just hard to deal with someone who can't put it where they want to. And I think there is room to develop a little bit more stuff in the major leagues. You could point to a Ross Stripling, who we spoke to on our previous episode, the changeup. Some people might have graded that as a 35 pitch when he went pro. Now it's getting swings and misses against major leaguers. Shane Bieber, there's another great example. When he was drafted, he was not viewed as someone who had frontline stuff. Then he goes out and wins a Cy Young. So you can develop that, I think, easier. I don't know where you land on this one, but for me, I would take the command. As long as the stuff is, 35 stuff isn't nothing. It's something you can work with.
I think you have a very good AAA starter who is going to get up to your big league team and get absolutely shelled.
Yep.
And I think that he is going to locate his 35 grade stuff in the zone, and these big league hitters are going to hit it 5 million miles. Give me the stuff. Give me the stuff, because I can work with that. Because honestly, maybe the worst case outcome here is that he's just an effectively wild reliever, right? And he's a guy who's coming out of my bullpen throwing absolute gas. The stuff's playing up even more now because it's out of my bullpen. And yeah, there's going to be some times where he can't find the zone, and there's going to be some times where he walks two guys. But because of how devastating the stuff is and playing up out of the bullpen and the spots that he's in, he's going to get trigger-happy hitters who are going to swing at stuff. They're going to chase and expand off the plate, and it's just going to be so devastating that he's going to get these ugly, funky swings. He's going to find a way to be effective for me in short bursts.
Right, and I mean, the counter to my own argument here is that this guy could just be Casey Lawrence, and that's someone who appears in the major leagues and has some utility, but he's not going to be a core player for you on a playoff team. I can see that side of it, but I would still take the command.
All right. After this, Ariel Helwani is going to join us to talk all things Blue Jays, Expos, Montreal, UFC, and more. After this, Ariel Helwani. Ariel Helwani's with us of the Ariel Helwani Show, the yes. MMA Hour, various other ventures, and a Blue Jays fandom.
Yes.
Caught you at batting practice yesterday, like a kid in a candy store.
Oh, my God.
I mean, what was kind of the interaction that you're going to take away from that?
Kid in a candy store is actually an understatement. Yeah. I was telling a friend of mine this morning, I'm like, I get to meet some pretty cool people in the fight world, the Conor McGregors of the world. I felt like I was on cloud nine there, because for me, baseball reminds me of when I was a kid going to the Big O, Expos games, begging the likes of Barry Bonds to sign my ball and Ricky Henderson and all the great Expos of yesteryear, and just being there with my kids and their first time getting that close. And I'm friends with Alec Manoa's agent, and that's who set that up. And so Alec came over and hung out with us for a few minutes, and I don't need to tell you guys, he's just as cool off camera as he is on camera. And so that was a huge thrill. I loved it. I love being, I'm thankful that you guys have me here right now so that I could just take this all in, because I don't get to do this often.
Well, tell us about that interaction with Alec Manoa, because he is a big presence. Yes. I think physically and even with the personality. What did you take away from that interaction with him?
First of all, he is a tank. I feel he's like a linebacker.
He'd be cutting to 265.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. And then some. What a down-to-earth, nice guy. My wife, who's in the jewelry business, guessed that his necklace cost around $150,000, which was pretty interesting. Wow. That he was just rocking that. I know he likes to wear, the...
Sweating in it,
just
running laps.
Yeah, just like chilling out. I just couldn't, when I used to go to Expos games back in the day, so I used to be a part of something called the Desjardins Fan Club. And the Desjardins Fan Club was for the bank, Desjardins. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It might just be a Quebec bank. And my brother and I signed up for it because if you were a member of the fan club, you get to go to eat early at Rusty Staub's restaurant at the Big O. We didn't care to eat. We would order a Coke, down it, and then we got to be first at BP. And we would go hang out on the visitor side and talk to all the guys. More often than not, they were not very nice. There were a few exceptions. Tony Gwynn was like a sweetheart of a guy. And he would stand there and talk to us and joke with us. I was wearing an Astros hat one time. He's like, I'm not signing an autograph for a kid with an Astros hat. So I threw it on the field so I could get his autograph. That's the kind of guy he was. Manoa, it reminded me of that. And the funny thing about it was, I didn't know this, Jeff didn't tell me this. He's a big MMA fan.
Yeah.
So he was asking me about UFC 278 on Saturday. He was asking me about Jorge Masvidal. I actually reached out to Masvidal's manager today, and they're going to link up to train together in the offseason. So I didn't know he even knew who I was or what MMA was. So that was really cool when you find out that one of the guys that you love is actually a fan of the sport,
too. A couple
of
Miami guys.
Yes, Masvidal, exactly. 305.
There's a lot of ball players that are MMA fans. Josh Donaldson, yes. Carlos Correa.
Yep.
Are there any fighters who are like closet baseball fans that you know of? Because I don't know if that's a two-way street or not.
Okay, I'll tell you one who you'd be surprised about. Daniel Cormier.
Really?
I'll call DC on like a Tuesday morning at 7, and he's playing MLB The Show. And he always plays with the Giants, and he's like playing some kid online who has no idea that it's him and talking smack to the kid. He's actually a big baseball fan, Bay Area guy. He lives in San Jose. So that's one who comes to mind. I would say that a lot of them are more like football fans.
Right.
A lot of them are pro wrestling fans, some basketball fans. It's tough these days with baseball. There's not as much crossover.
Yeah.
But I'm actually very surprised at how many baseball fans are MMA fans. Like the first time I met Donaldson at the event in Toronto, and we remain friends, like he knows his stuff. He loves it. Correa could be an MMA analyst. No joke. Like this guy could break it down impressively well. And so there's guys like that who I've met along the way. And Manoa was telling me that he's a fan. I know Bichette, when they were in Montreal a couple years ago, took a picture with GSP and wrote something nice about him. So it's very cool when our little sport that we feel like no one cares about gets that kind of recognition.
Yeah, it's so cool. And I think, you know, for you to hear it from the other side, your kind of memories of those players going through the Big O, you mentioned a couple of them so far, like Tony Gwynn, Barry Bonds, Ricky Henderson. Who else stands out from that era? Because for me personally, that's an era where I was like obsessed with those players, you know, had their cards, like obviously tracking their stats. And so it's kind of fun to have those names come back up. So who else would be in that group for you?
So, I mean, so obviously I was an Expos fan. My favorite Expo of all time, I don't even know if you guys will remember him. You might because you're like hardcore. Lenny Webster. Do you remember Lenny Webster?
Honestly, no.
You don't?
No.
Lenny Webster was Jeff Facero's personal catcher. He would only play every 5 days, and he would only play when Facero was pitching. You remember Jeff Facero, right?
Yeah.
And he was number 25. He ended up playing for the Indians, started with the Twins. There was something about him that I just loved. And so that was my guy. He'd give me his bat. He'd give me his batting glove. Like we kind of, because no one was asking Lenny Webster for anything back then. But because the Expos are always around, I would go to the visiting side of things. And so I have had great interactions, like Bonds in particular. So I would go early, and I remember one time he was actually signing. He didn't always sign. And I had my Sharpie, and you want them to sign in a certain spot in the middle, the sweet spot. And I remember him taking my ball, and he started to sign. Not only did he not sign with the Sharpie, he was signing with a blue pen. And that's just, like, bad. You don't want an autographed blue pen on a baseball. And I said, Mr. Bonds, do you mind if you use my pen and sign in the middle? And he looks up at me. He goes, who's signing the autograph here, kid, me or you? I'll sign it wherever I want.
Wow.
I was like, wow. I remember one time my hands were, like, over the dugout like this. And Ken Caminiti, may he rest in peace, took his bat and smashed it and almost tried to hit my hands because I was, like, leaning over too much. So I've had some bad interactions.
Whoa.
But I've also had some really great ones. And the Tony Gwynn one probably, like, was the greatest because it was Tony Gwynn in his prime just joking with us. It was
so
amazing.
Cool. So when is baseball coming back to Montreal, then?
Can you answer this?
When are you going to stop being used as a pawn? You know, and
Thank you for saying that.
When is it going to be legit?
Listen, I spoke to the great Stephen Brunt back in October, and he told me that he was so confident that this was going to be a done deal. And I was like, Stephen, if you're telling me this, God bless.
Griffintown, the whole deal.
I don't believe any of it.
No.
There's not a 1% part of my soul that believes this. And it's very disheartening because I know, and you guys know, Montreal is a baseball town and you've been to those preseason games.
Yeah.
And I know it's just two games. And I know it's just I'd been there when the Big O was rocking in the 90s. The problem was the stadium. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's closed. There's only three nice months out of the year. In my lifetime, I don't think it's going to happen, sadly. No. It makes me very sad. And that's why my kids are Blue Jays fans now, because I couldn't do that to them. But I tell you, man, I would take an 0-162 season just to see that team back again, because I really did love them. Like, I was a season ticket holder.
Right.
People joke that there aren't Expos fans. Yeah. There were Expos fans. We existed. And it just bumps me out. And I also believe if they would have just stayed around maybe three or four more years with MLB Network and the revenue sharing and all that, they could have survived. Unfortunately, they didn't.
Well, exactly. I mean, you look at some markets like, I don't know, Cleveland or Pittsburgh. Those cities, from a market size standpoint, are not bigger than Montreal. Even St. Louis, which we kind of think of as a big market team, that is a small city. Montreal is a big city. I mean, I don't have to tell you or anyone listening or watching, but it's a big city. And so it is a shame and I would love to see it back. But
you guys went to those games, right? The preseason games? The spring training games?
I did a few times.
Did the one in Montreal.
You went, we did podcasts there.
Exactly, we did.
Did you do the one where Vladdy hit the walk-off?
Hell yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, my! Get up, ball! Get up, and right on cue! What a way to cap off a spring!
He's in Montreal where his father made his name, wearing his number. He comes up with two outs in the bottom of the ninth inning, and the crowd doesn't want to leave. Hits a home run, and they want a curtain call.
That literally like got me emotional watching that, watching him do that where his dad did it.
The stadium shouldn't have baseball in it right now. It probably shouldn't have had baseball in it back then. Like, where were your seats? Like, where were your tickets?
Back in the day?
Yeah.
Third base side. Like, just like lower level and always third base for some reason. I just liked the vantage point.
Right.
They were the
best. So you were pointing at the mound.
Like, Oh, it was great, man. Right. I was there. I remember Hideo Nomo. I think it was in 96. We were a Sunday night baseball game in his rookie year, and he was on fire. And, you know, ESPN never came to Montreal for games, so that was really cool. I mean, I saw some really – there was a series against the Phillies in 93. Will Cordero hit a line drive over to the third baseline, and we were neck and neck with the Phillies back then when we were trying to make the playoffs in 93. And then, of course, in 94, you know, we were robbed of that. I went to those 94 games. Cliff Floyd hitting the home run off of Greg Maddux, iconic moment.
Yeah,
I could sit here and talk to you guys for 4 hours about the Expos.
Well, it just feels like open air stadium in a young up and coming area. It could be Griffintown, it could be wherever in Montreal. Like, there could be such an amazing atmosphere around.
Oh my
that.
God,
Montreal in the summer.
Montreal
is
in
like
summer is the best.
Unbeatable.
It is.
I mean, look at the F1. They come in June. The Alouettes have done great open air. They went to McGill. It would be perfect. Can I tell you something? 17 years ago this week was one of the last Expos games I went to. It was in 2000, what are we now? 19 years ago. It was in 2003. And I don't know if I could say this here, but basically I was a very straight-laced kid. My friends weren't. And a friend of mine always wanted me to partake in something that could be deemed illegal, if you get what I'm saying.
Uh-huh. It is no longer illegal.
I just don't want to get anyone in trouble. Yeah. And so what happened was Expos were down 3-0 to the Giants. Brad Wilkerson comes up, bottom of the ninth, two outs. And I said to my friend, if he hits a walk-off grand slam, I will do this with you. Walk-off grand slam, it's the last time that I ever did that, if you get what I'm saying.
That's amazing. I just love the names too, Brad Wilkerson and Will Cordero and Jeff Becerra. I mean, such a great history for the Montreal Expos, and even just bringing it back a little bit is awesome. I think the Jays could do a much better job of celebrating their history, but when you think about Canada and baseball, there really is so much history there to celebrate.
Thank you. A lot of Expos fans will not root for the Jays because they voted to contract the Expos, if you recall, in 2002, and they hold that against them. And I can understand that. I thought that was a pretty crappy move on their part, if I'm being honest. That being said, I love them because of Vladdy. I love what they're doing. I was rooting for Anthopoulos. I wanted them to win in 2015, all that stuff. And it's Canada's only team. And so it's way more fun to be a fan of a team than not.
So you're a Blue Jays fan now, and people know you now, independent Helwani. You don't hold back.
Yes.
You know, no holds barred.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
What do you got?
Let's get on the nose.
Yes,
what's
yes.
your most like inflammatory? That's probably the wrong word. Like, what is your most like staunch Blue Jays opinion right now? Maybe that goes against the trend, that maybe's outside the box.
I'll tell you what, like, they're missing a leader.
Yeah.
They don't have a leader. And I don't know if that's a hot take per se. But I was never a fan of the Montoyo hiring, with all due respect. A good friend of mine, his name is Jason Takifman. He used to be the GM of the Vancouver Canadiens, the single A team, and knew Mr. Schneider when he was there coming up, and speaks very highly of him. And so I'd like to support him, and I think that he could be that guy. And I like his sort of, you know, loud, boisterous attitude. But in the clubhouse, as far as the players go, who's the leader? Who's the voice? Who's the guy that's going to tie them together? I don't know. And that's what I think they're missing.
I'd say it's George Springer.
I was going to say the same thing.
But is he that guy? Is he truly that guy?
Well,
with all due respect.
And I love this. I love the takes that you're bringing here. This is great. I think, so to the extent that we can know, which is limited, I think he is. I think that he is consistent. And in baseball, I think the consistency is essential for any kind of leader. But Springer, at least in my interactions with him, he just seems very consistent day to day, but with the energy, with the energy. So, I'm not saying there's not another level or that there isn't something to what you're saying, but I do have a good impression of Springer.
It's an interesting blend, right? Because it's a very young team when you think about it. Guys like you mentioned, Vlad and Bo, these guys are like 23, right? Like, you know, Adley Rutschman is older than those guys. Vlad's already been one trip through arbitration, right? Adley Rutschman's in like his fourth month in baseball, so at this level. So like, it is a weird blend of those very young players, Alejandro Kirk as well, with guys like Springer, with guys like Kevin Gausman, who's been around the sun a few times in this league as well. So it's like, I agree with you that like it would be tough to isolate one individual as that is the leader. But I don't know if that's baseball at the same time, though, right?
It's fair.
In those Expos scenes you're talking about, was there one guy who was the leader? I think in baseball, it's more of a collective
fair. Although everyone respected Felipe so much, right? Yeah. They had that voice, right? They had that guy who had been around for so long in the game. And I don't know, obviously Schneider's been around, but not at that level.
Right.
And so I'm not trying to, you know, I'm a huge Buffalo Bills fan as well.
Yeah.
And the same type of stuff that people were saying about the Bills going into last season, they were saying about the Blue Jays going to this season. Favorites, preseason, all that stuff. And I wondered if at one point it was getting to be a lot where they were starting to buy their own hype and starting to, you know, puff their chest out. Like, we've already won. You guys haven't won anything, right?
Yeah.
And it reminded me of the Bills. And the Bills at one point, I don't know if you guys follow football, but like they had that rough stretch in November, and it kind of reminds you of the rough stretch that they went on, but then they turned it around last minute. Now the Bills have Josh Allen. Who's Josh Allen here, right?
Well, they also have Stephon Diggs, right? Isn't
sure.
it a few guys? I just think that's like a weird hockey thing
sure.
that leads into other sports coverage, where it's like, who's the captain?
Okay, so if you have Springer, who's the next guy?
I think Kevin Gausman's a leader, absolutely. I think that like at times, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., by his actions and by his performance, is a leader. Not necessarily the most vocal guy, honestly, in the clubhouse, I don't
right.
think. But I think that on the field, in big moments in the batter's box,
I
through
hope
actions,
so.
He's a leader.
You would know better than I would. His dad was never vocal as well.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting, too, because one way or another, this is the time for that leadership to show, right? You've got 45 games left, and we were talking to Ross Stripling about this yesterday. Kind of
I
the,
heard it.
The, oh, very nice. But, you know, this idea that they did buy into their own hype, right? And that they kind of got ahead of themselves a little bit. And now it's time for them collectively or individually to find a way to actually step up and make the most of their potential on a granular level. Like not 162 games at once, or like Stripling was saying, whatever it is, hitting a 5-run homer, but really trying to find ways to just advance it inning by inning and play by play.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of pressure on them, because what was the narrative at the end of last season? We'll be back next season. We're not going to make the same mistake. We're not going to leave it for the last weekend. We're not going to let someone else control our destiny. And now it feels like we're going the direction of potentially needing other people to help control their destiny. I would be lying if I didn't say that I was disappointed in Bichette this year. I don't love his body language. It feels like he doesn't have that joie de vivre, that esprit that you need and that he maybe had. And I don't know what's going on there. And you guys probably know a lot more behind the scenes. I'm just speaking as a fan. But I miss that out of him. And I'd love to see them, you know, somehow figure it out to get him back. Barrios hasn't been great, but yesterday he was tremendous.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to like. There's a lot that's frustrating. They go on these runs and you're like, that's the team, right? And then they're like, can you guys score? What's going on? So
it's Friday here at Yankee Stadium. You mentioned Barrios on Thursday, who had that really strong outing here at Yankee Stadium. But also, like, I thought showed something when he got into trouble, right? When he's got runners on, and when he's walking guys, there have been times this year where that's when it spirals and that's where it goes down the drain. And he pulled himself out of that. That's something Yusei Kikuchi hasn't been able to do this year. When things go bad, they've gone really bad, and he's out of the game. Jose Barrios was able to sort of resuscitate his outing. I think that was a big step for him, confidence-wise even. There's a bit of a parallel to fighting there, right?
Yeah.
Where, like, for a fighter, you have to go into the octagon with ultimate, utmost confidence. It's just you in there, right? And you have to, like you said, believe your own hype a little bit. But you can't believe it too much, right? Like, if you're Kamaru Usman, I mean, you might be pound for pound best, but you also have to go in there and, like, execute fundamentals against Leon Edwards. Like, you have to have a game plan to execute that. I think it's kind of similar with baseball, with, like, Jose Barrios needs to be really confident in those moments and believe his own hype. Believe I'm Jose friggin' Barrios, and I have 5 years of being the most consistent guy in baseball to prove it, but then also execute a curveball and execute a two-seamer, whereas earlier in the year, maybe that execution was missing in those times when things weren't going well.
Agree more. I'll add 2 things to that. It's funny you bring up Usman. I actually think he's believing his own hype too much right now.
Yeah.
And I think he's ripe for the taking if Edwards is able to execute the game plan on Saturday night. I love, and I was thinking of this, I was listening to your interview this morning walking my dog with Stripling, and I loved what he said about when Schneider went to the mound and asked him if he wanted, you know, to keep going. And I think that's really cool on Schneider's part. And I thought it was really cool on Stripling's part to say, I'm done. Because there's a lot of fighters who wouldn't say that, and then they go out and they make a huge mistake. Now, of course, he could walk off. He has a great moment. He can't just leave a fight when you're no longer there.
Yeah.
But to be that confident and say, you know what? I trust the guys behind me to take this home, and I don't got any more. And in fact, I'd be a detriment to the team if I stayed, even though my ego probably wants to stay. Actually, it was a really impressive thing that you don't hear a lot of athletes say.
It was really insightful, too, to hear him say he was anxious coming to that. He was feeling nerves because of how the team's been performing lately. And there is kind of a divide between, I think there's certain fighters who go in and are like, I'm the SHIT, I'm the best, whatever. There's other guys who will admit, I'm always scared. Dominic Cruz admits, I'm always scared when I go in there. I always feel that anxiety. Yep. Even a guy like him, who's like the vet of all
GSP,
vets.
GSP would tell me he would throw up backstage before his fights. So I actually think that makes them more likable and more relatable as opposed to someone who's like, nah, I was just chilling, you know? I was like, what? I'd be crapping in my pants if I was going into a cage with someone else.
Well, because of course you're feeling that anxiety and those nerves, whether you're going into an octagon in Utah or whether you're going out on this mound
for
40,000 New Yorkers, of which you are one, yelling at you and screaming profanities.
I was not yelling profanities at anyone. You were, I was cheering. Cheering very annoyingly.
But you were amongst them,
yes,
right?
I was amongst them.
I mean, you were looking out at the, I think you were sitting over.
I was sitting over there. Yes, I got a great shot. Do you see my video of Vladdy? I'm just filming him, and then he hits the homer, and I completely lost it. My video work was horrendous. Passan made fun of me on Twitter, said I was a jabroni for my video work because I was totally filming off there because I was watching him round the bases. But I couldn't believe that I actually, first time I ever see a Guerrero family member hit a home run in person since 2003.
Wow.
Pretty amazing,
awesome.
Right?
Yeah. And it is so telling, like, you know, the amount of pressure that these guys are under. And you mentioned Bichette before, maybe not seeming as though he's enjoying this season to the extent that he has before, potentially. And what a tough thing that must be for these guys to kind of navigate when you think about, okay, you have this massive amount of pressure for yourself, for your team. You have to produce. And then if you're having fun, okay, great, it's all coming naturally. But then if you're not, then all of a sudden it can get really hard. I'm sure that's true basically across any sport, but certainly in baseball.
And imagine doing it in 2022 with podcasts, with social media, with Twitter, with people literally being able to DM you and tell you you suck. You know, like when I see sometimes a fighter, you know, a fighter loses like a Dom, and then he'll come back a couple days later on social and be like, I'm sorry, guys, I'll be back, just figure things out. And then you're like, reading the comments is like, man, I had you in my parlay and you screwed. And I was like, wow, I can't imagine. You know, I can't imagine. I know they get paid and I know they're famous. I can't imagine being a player who has to play 162 and then listen to that, because you know he hears it. You know they're all on their phones. You know they read it. Am I right, though? Has he lost that something? Like,
well, with Bo, I do think that I think it's been a stressful season for him.
Right.
I think that's accurate. I think that, and he said it. He said that, you know, realistically, this season's been a struggle for him offensively. And you've seen even defensively certain moments where he struggled, you know, with Vladdy and that pop-up. I know it was a while back now, but there have been moments where that frustration has showed. And the season's long. It's not over. There could be a point where he gets to kind of release and enjoy. But I think it has been a hard season.
He puts a lot of pressure on himself, Bo.
Really?
Because this is the family business, right? And he's, in a way, been raised to be a ball player, right? Like, when he was 12, 13, he was with his dad at Coors Field, like, hitting bombs, homeschooled. Most of the day was spent working out at, like, they, you know, Bo or Dante had, like, a warehouse nearby that he bought, outfitted it with, you know, batting cages and all this stuff. And so they would just train baseball every day, played elite, you know, elite baseball growing up, travel ball, in the draft, knew exactly where he wanted to go and where he didn't want to go, right? Like, teams he wasn't going to go to. He wanted to be a Blue Jay because of how they were going to develop him and bring him along. So he's put a lot of pressure on himself to get to this level and to succeed at this level. And the other day, when he's hitting seventh in the Blue Jays batting order, I don't think in his life he's ever hit seventh at any level. He has been the best player on every team he's been on, last year sort of included, right? Next to Vlad and next to Simeon. So I think that facing that failure this year and not being his best would have to be a serious mental hurdle to overcome.
I still believe in him. I joke with my friend JD Bunkus that he jumped off the Vladdy bandwagon a couple years ago when I would go on his show with Ben Ennis, and they would be like, oh, he's too big. He's too that. I was like, Jesus Christ, can you guys? The guy's like 21 years old, all right? He'll figure it out. Yeah. Now look at him. He's the man. He's the face of baseball, if you ask me. He should be the MVP. I don't care what Aaron Judge is doing. And I believe in Bo, but I just think it's been a tough year for him. But, I mean, how old is he? 20?
Bo's 23, 24.
Yeah. I mean, he'll be fine. I hope he sticks around. I hope they don't give up on him. I really do like him. And I love this team. They're such a likable team. Like, Kirk is so much fun. Springer, even though I was talking, like, I really do like him. you know, Guriel, all these dudes. Jordan Romano is the man. I love him. He gave my kids an autograph yesterday, so now I'm a fan for life. They're a likable team. I just feel like there's some, and I agree. I think I was listening to you guys. Like, I was hoping for something at the deadline. I know they did a couple moves. There just wasn't that.
A little panache.
Great word. Yeah. There was that one thing that I was craving that I didn't get out of the deadline.
I feel like Mitch White's going to be solid for this team going forward. Anthony Bass, really underrated. Zach Pop's sinker is unhittable. And whom I forget, Whit Merrifield. Honestly, been a little bit of a strange debut for Whit Merrifield. Striking out a lot. Not what you expect from him.
Could have used one more.
Yeah, could have used one. We got Jackie Bradley Jr. Got his autograph yesterday. Yeah. That was exciting. I don't know what he's going to do. Right. But just something. There was something that I was... I don't know what it was. Like, obviously, I knew they weren't going to get Soto. I didn't believe any of that stuff. You talk about being used as leverage. I feel like the Blue Jays get used as leverage.
They do.
Freddie Freeman. Oh, yeah, we get all excited. And he goes... The Soto stuff, I never believed Soto was coming.
Syndergaard and Iglesias?
Yes.
That was leverage.
Yes.
Yeah, the Blue Jays were used in that.
That annoys me very much.
Ariel, I could talk to you forever. I've been getting the wrap up for about 10 minutes.
Oh,
now,
really? So come on, no one's kicking us out.
I know.
Let's talk about the 94 Expos. August 12th. It was amazing. What are they going to do? What are the Yankees going to do to us? They're going to do nothing to us.
We've got all the power.
Yeah, come on. They love us here.
But thank you so much.
Thank you.
Your success has been amazing to watch. Oh, JD and Ben are never going to let us hear the end of it, that you dropped their names in this.
I know. I had to. I couldn't make a show this past week, so I feel bad. So that's my I'm sorry to you, JD Bunkus.
All right. He's Ariel Helwani. Thanks a lot. All right, that's going to be it for us today, but lots more coming from the Bronx all weekend. Want to thank our producers, Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. They are doing yeoman's work out here and making this all look great and sound great. So a huge thanks to them. He's Ben Nicholson-Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. You can get more at the letters at sportsnet.ca. Talk to you next time on At the Letters.